On Wednesday night, the Washington Capitals defeated the Tampa Bay Lightning 4-0 in Game 7 to advance to the Stanley Cup Finals for the first time in two decades. I immediately went to sleep because I was a tired boy. Ian, on the other hand, went to Dulles International Airport. What happened, Ian?
Oh, that was really, really fun. So the reason why I went was 20 years ago when I was 13 years old, the Capitals won the Eastern Conference Championship for the first time in team history. And I asked my dad if we could go to Piney Orchard Ice Arena, the Capitals' former practice facility in Maryland, so that we could celebrate with the team and fans. And my dad said no. I think it was a Sunday night going into a Monday morning. I had school the next day. And, you know, it just wasn't a thing that my family did. So I understood. But I ended up seeing the news and seeing the players throw their Eastern Conference championship hats into the crowd. There were thousands of people there. I think Horn Guy was there, too. And it was just something that I can't really say I regretted it not being there, but it was just something I always wanted to do. So 20 years later, I was like, I'm not going to let anything stand in the way, even a PR tweet of going to the airport and welcoming the boys home. And I really just wanted to congratulate two people, Ole Kolzik, because he's still with the organization and he was there. He was the person that I thought led the team to their first Eastern Conference championship, and Alex Ovechkin. You know, and I also kind of wanted to see the trophy and just observe it, because I assumed hundreds of fans would be there. Well, no. There were about 12 people, 12 to 15 people, I would say, just my best guess, and about 5 media people, and then there was about 30 cops. So I ended up arriving. I drove down an hour and a half from Frederick, and I got there.
Wait. It took you an hour and a half to get from Frederick to Dulles?
I mean, that's how it felt. I don't know, actually. Maybe it was way less than that. I don't know.
No one cares about this, but did you take the Beltway or did you take 15?
I took the Beltway because I was just worried that going on the windy roads in the countryside would be hard at 2 a.m. for me.
You got to go 340 to 15. You got to take the Harper's Ferry route. But anyway, the listeners don't care. So stop talking about how you got there and keep telling the story.
Sure. So when I first arrived, about 5 minutes later, you could actually see the team plane miles and miles and miles away, the lights. And eventually they arrived, and Ovi was the first one off. I think people have seen the video already of him, you know, cradling the trophy with one hand. He let a few fans touch it. And then as he was about to go in his car, he kind of kept his head down, not really looking at people because he didn't want to, you know, have people be inundated with requests as he's trying to get home. Well, after he gave the trophy to his personal trainer, Pavel, I went, "Hey, Ovi, it's Ian from RMNB." And he turned around with the biggest smile ever, which was really funny. And we kind of embraced. And I don't know if it was me or him, but someone said, "Picture, picture." And then about everyone who was there just took pictures of us smiling. And he was just really, really happy to see me. We know of each other because of we helped release a Papa John's commercial for him a few years ago. And
it's really good pizza.
I think he reads the site. But regardless, he was really, really excited to see me. And that was just a really, really special moment. You know, I had all this horrible reservation about going. And I also didn't want a fanboy because I guess I am a journalist, but I fanboyed. I wore the Ovi shirt because I thought that would be funny. And it was. And I think that was a really special moment. And I knew it was a really special moment when last night I looked at our Instagram page, the RMNB Instagram, and I looked at the comments. Now, Instagram commenters are notoriously awful people. All right. Awful. But like the comments are just like when you read the comments, they're always just like, "Oh, hate the Caps," or "Ovi stupid," or there's always trolls and things like that. And I went through and we had like 50 comments and all of them were nice. All of them were nice to me too, somehow. And we had over like 5,000 likes on the picture. It's one of our most liked picture we've ever posted. And I don't know. It's now my new favorite hockey memory.
I'm looking at it. This is a gorgeous picture. This is so cool. I don't think Ovia stopped smiling. This person just said, stand to legends. That's something that our olds will have to have explained to them, what it means to stand something. I really hope Ovi isn't the blogger. You are all of us. Well done. That's a very special moment, Ian. And we're in a special moment overall right now, standing on the precipice of something big. The Washington Capitals going to the Stanley Cup Finals with a real chance to win. The Vegas Golden Knights are not the 1998 Detroit Red Wings. And that is the topic of today's Fresh Machine Podcast.
And now, it's time for the RMNB Podcast.
Ian, 62 seconds into game four, Tom Wilson hits a dude wearing blue. I don't care who it was anymore.
Kunitz.
Oh, I do care. It was Kunitz. Awesome. Oh, yeah. Doubly special. Forces a turnover. He and Kuznetsov exchange the puck. Kuznetsov gets into the offensive zone, sends like a one-time pass to Ovechkin, who just, you know, from the Ovi spot, one-times it and beats Andre Vasilevsky early in game seven. The Bolts, you know, tremendously try to muster a comeback, but then Andre Burakovsky exploits Dan Girardi. That contract really came back to bite Tampa at the right time and score. Then he does it again. Then there's empty netter from Nicky Backstrom. Somehow the Washington Capitals in a game seven did the exact opposite of what the Washington Capitals do in a game seven. It was the most relaxing game experience, playoff game experience of my fan career, with the exception of people giving me a hard time about Tom Wilson's fight. I had a blast. What did you think?
Oh, about the fight?
About the whole game.
Well, let's talk about the fight first, because I want you to share your feelings about it.
I don't have feelings. My feelings are, hey, that was a cool fight. my thoughts are, in game seven, when your team is up by one goal and the other team is pushing tremendously and it's 4-on-4 hockey and your team has the puck in the offensive zone with the potential to generate a scoring chance and completely stymie what the Bolts are doing, you probably should not then stop the play, take yourself a top line scoring forward off the ice for 5 minutes in exchange for a plug who's a third pair defenseman. He's not a bad defenseman, but there's no way on earth anyone would construe that exchange. Was it Braden Coburn, right?
Yes.
Yeah. There's no way that anyone would think that Braden Coburn for Tom Wilson was a good exchange. And the only defense for it, you know, comes to like, yeah, to stick up for his boys. You don't pull off somebody's jersey. Well, then beat him on the damn scoreboard, you dingus. Like, obviously. Anyway, again, I don't care. Like, the team won. But people were mean to me on the internet about it, and that's all I care about.
You know what? It was the most boss thing I've ever seen, where he gets out of the penalty box first to go to the other penalty box door to fight the man. I mean, I found that to be hilarious. Now, I completely agree with all your analysis, and I think we all have to remember that, but I don't think anyone was really thinking with their thinking brain when that was happening, including Tom.
Thinking brain. Beautiful. I want to talk about my third favorite story of the night, which is Andre Burakovsky. Andre Burakovsky scratched, broke both of his hands. He's a shadow of the man he was, and yet came out of nowhere, except for directly from last year's playoffs against Pittsburgh, to score two huge goals in a gigantic game. What do you think of Burakovsky's turnaround?
Well, I like to think that a part of it is because he kind of had that open-ended session with the press where he started talking about how he hired a sports psychologist and he really opened up about his issue. I think that might have been freeing for him. I mean, it could be completely coincidental, but when you're struggling, when you're having problems with something, especially emotionally and mentally, sometimes the best thing to do is just to let it out. And the fact that he did that, I had so much respect for him because, you know, Andre is not a rocket scientist by any means, but I think that was just a really powerful moment, you know, that day after practice. And I'm really happy for him that, you know, after that happened, he scores two goals in one of the biggest games in Capitals history. He's always been a game changing talent, you know, and if the thing that's holding him back is mental, I mean, good God, I can't wait to see what he does next year. But I wasn't necessarily surprised by it at all. We both know he's a great player. He struggled this year because of injury, I think. I think that's mostly it. But I'm really hopeful that he can keep it going in the Stanley Cup final, because you remember last year when they played the Penguins, he had those three big games in a row. I mean, I thought he was the guy who pushed for a game seven. So they had no chance in that series until he blew up. So I just hope it can continue.
So for people listening, in games five and six of the Penguin series last season, Andre scored two goals and got an assist. He was a game breaker in those two. And then those were two games where he played on the top line. And that's why everyone's like, oh, you know, Burakovsky's earned his spot. He's going to be the top line winger. Question for you, though. The sports psychologist thing. Has he already met with this person?
I think he hired him. I think he's been talking to someone and has the deal done. And I think he's going to do it after the season. That's kind of how he made it sound like.
I no need now.
No, I think he still needs it.
Okay. We all need some healthcare professionals from time to time. Yeah, so I guess the other thing is, you know, Ovechkin scoring that beautiful goal, and Ovechkin, honestly, no one seriously has been doing the narrative, the Ovechkin, you know, can't get his team past point X, can't do thing as a team. He's only an individual. No one's doing that. The only people that are doing that are the people that are saying, oh, these people that used to say that are wrong. But they were the same people that did it 5-10 years ago. Columnists for the Washington Post. So
berries
no one
for Luga.
Yeah, not. It's when there's a column that's not like a when there's a column in the Post about the Capitals, either it's the playoffs and they're just like vultures, or there's something terrible or good happening during the regular season and they're like skeptical. They're just like, it's what like Sarah Palin calls like the drive-by media. It's just no one, the lamestream media. Like, no one thinks that this guy cares about the team between the months of October and February, right? Like, he's watching football and they're mandatory kneeling. Not mandatory kneeling, whatever. But the big story for me in game seven and going into this final series against Marc-Andre Fleury is Braden freaking Holtby. Back-to-back shutouts. I think he had 60 saves in a row against a team that in the regular season scored more goals than any team in the league, had easily the best offense with Stamkos and Kucherov, but also getting that secondary production from, like, you know, Brayden Point. And an amazing team. Victor Hedman as well on defense. Amazing team getting completely shut down. The defense and the skaters had a lot to do with it. Braden Holtby just gift-wrapped the finals to the Washington Capitals. It was amazing. And this guy didn't start the first two games of the playoffs, and in the middle of February was unplayable. It's amazing the turnaround that he has made. And it, you know, there comes a time where we'll need to like balance out what Braden Holtby has done individually and what was the result of the team in front of him. And I've written way too many words about how Braden Holtby's performance was bad only insofar as the most extreme high quality shots were just way worse than they had been, and in way more volume than they had been. And the team was really struggling before the Michael Kempney addition, and you know, the defense has gotten a lot better since they've iced Madison Bowie. But what Braden Holtby has done is an amazing story that's eclipsed only by the gonzo postseason that Marc-Andre Fleury is having. I'm so happy for Braden Holtby, and I when we think about this, like when you, for example, chalked up like the 1998 playoffs to Ole Kolzig, making, you know, carrying them to the finals, which he definitely did. Holy crap! Did Holtby do the same for the 2018 Caps?
I think, and with that, you have to think about Ovechkin and Kuznetsov too, just like Banzai did so in the 1998 series. But I would agree with that. Noel Banzai had the most goals, but. But, you know, Holtby was great in 6 and 7, and I don't want to take anything away from him, but I also thought the Caps defense and the way they have played the last two games made it kind of easy, too. Somewhat. I mean, there were still a bunch of scoring chances, but I just think the team is playing so freaking well. I mean, when Tampa pushed back, they lost those 3 straight games, but the hockey they're playing makes me excited, you know? And the only team that I worry about is Vegas.
Well, they're the only team left to worry about. There's no one else out. So I guess this is the point to say, and I wrote about this right before the Capitals lost 3 games in a row, which was awful timing. But the Capitals, structurally, the underlying pattern of their play is hugely improved from where it was in the regular season. I mean, there was a time when the Capitals and the Islanders were giving up more of those high danger scoring chances than any team in the league has over the last, you know, like 10 years. And like the 5-on-5 numbers that the Capitals put up, put their like playoff ceiling somewhere around last year's Ottawa Senators, who made it to the conference finals on a stroke of luck. Well, the Capitals have gone past the Eastern Conference Finals, and the underlying pattern of their play is revolutionized. It's just a completely different team as far as how they're putting it together. If I could imagine the three worst teams for the Capitals to go against, it would have been Columbus, who's amazing at even strength, the Penguins, who were pretty darn good at amazing at even strength, and Tampa Bay Lightning, who were probably the best team in the league at even strength. And Washington didn't just hold them back. They outplayed, they controlled 5-on-5 flow for this whole series. It's completely unforeseeable that this happened, and I don't know how to adjudicate it except to say that I don't think Barry Trotz gets all the credit.
Well, something happened. Just the way they, like I said, the way they play in neutral and in the defensive zone, the forwards, something changed. And if it's player effort, if it's they really committed more to like being physical, if it's just literally Tom Wilson chucking passes out of the defensive zone after he wins a board battle. I don't know what it was, but something changed where the defensive mindset of the team is way, way better. I think they have the third best defense in this year's playoffs so far in terms of goals against. I think they've only given up. You retweeted what's-his-face's tweet earlier today.
Who's?
The one that has the 5-on-5 stuff.
Oh, Dom from The Athletic?
Yeah. Well, yeah. The Capitals' goals against average 5-on-5 is one of the best in the playoffs. And I just think that's insane when you think about how bad this team was in the beginning of the year. I mean, I agree. It's what I had someone yesterday I asked for ideas of things to post about, you know, because I was just interested in what people wanted to see from us. And, you know, that we had some trolls, and one of the trolls was like, you need to apologize for your prediction in the first round that you didn't believe in this team. And I didn't then. But why would I? They were horrible this year, if you think about it. beyond having superstar performances from Braden Holtby in the beginning of the year, Alex Ovechkin through the entire year, Nicholas Backstrom, and at times Kuznetsov, they were led by superstar performances. This was not a team that was playing well for most of the year, but they came together at the right time. And I think they came together in Game 3 of the first round, and they haven't looked back since. I've just been unbelievably impressed by this team in the playoffs. But I have literally no regrets, no sorries for my prediction in the first round. I did not think they were going to get past it. I didn't. And
I think that's totally fair. And honestly, the way I thought the Capitals would win that first round, I was completely wrong about. I thought that they would get amazing goaltending out of Philip Grubauer, and I thought they'd win on the strength of their special teams. I think the PK was amazing during that first series after Game 2. Philip Grubauer didn't play after Game 2, and they wanted even strength. So the way I predicted the Caps would win was not the way the Caps would win, and you're entirely justified to have picked the pick you did. If I could, and I don't want to turn this into like an analysis thing, but there's to break down what's been going well, I think like maybe we have to start on the back end and say Dmitry Orlov and Matt Niskanen had an off season by any description, and what he's doing now, what they're doing now, they're playing tougher minutes than they played at all during the regular season. I think they're going to see a ton of Marchessault and Carlson, next week. And they're still driving play. They're, you know, getting more scoring chances than anybody else during even strength. Dmitry Orlov is playing great on the PK, but he's got just garbage saving during the PK. And that's something that scares me a little bit and deserves some analysis. Dmitry Orlov also has been instrumental in breakouts. And this is where I think stuff's been going really well. Even though we saw that one, I forget whose goal it was, but when Brooks Orpik was getting attacked during the forecheck and then, you know, chucked the puck up, and then maybe it was like Chandler Stevenson or Devontae Smith-Pelly that scored after that, that like icing that turned into a goal.
DSP.
That was Devontae
Smith-Pelly.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, that was like a failed breakout attempt as Orpik got sort of attacked. But Carlson and Kempney, I think they've got some problems playing without the puck, but when they're doing a clean breakout, they're both really good passers. Obviously, we know that about Carlson, but we're still learning about Kempney. They have two really good options there. You know, up on offense, Eller's been amazing and hasn't been scoring. I think, you know, Eller's due for a little bit. And, you know, no matter who he's with, Jacob Vrana is just generating a crap ton of goals. TJ Oshie is a player that I love very much. I'm very critical about the contract, and I'm worried about his ability to continue the progress we saw last year. I don't think he'll ever come close to that again. But he's playing such a heavy style of hockey right now, him and Wilson and Ovechkin, that if you're going up against the top six, I understand why Cooper put like the Paquette line up against them and got smushed. But I understand why he did it, because it's brutal to play against those guys. If you get the puck at all, you're going to get creamed. And I know that's not my favorite kind of hockey, but it's effective as hell, and it should be appreciated. Brooks Orpik has improved. I think he's actually been pretty good on the PK as well. I know he gets a lot of criticism for that, but I'm not sure that he's doing anything materially wrong there. And he's been very lucky to have really high shooting, like on ice shooting percentages and on ice saving percentages give him, I think, I'm sure is like the league's highest postseason plus minus. Actually, I hope somebody gives him a Conn Smythe vote just for that. Everything. And then Alex Ovechkin and Kuznetsov are playing out of their skulls. I mean, the elite level hockey by any description. It's the team is playing with this roster. You could not do any better than you're doing right now. I think the fourth line has a lot of problems, but they have these huge plays that come up every other game, and you just say, well, whatever, we'll eat it. We'll eat them getting buried as long as they can do something amazing like they did in game six of the last series. So, everyone's great. No one has improved nearly as much as Braden Holtby has, though.
You know, I'm going to go back to Orlov, though, is that, you know, when Orlov first came to the league, we all thought, and I think we should have, that he was going to be an offensive superstar defenseman. At least that's how I projected him. I know that when his underlying play always disturbed you in the very beginning, which it should have. But the transformation into him being one of the most unselfish defensive players I've seen. I mean, this guy is a defensive defenseman now, if you think about it. And he's just been unbelievable. I think that really speaks to how much he cares just about his teammates, about winning. Because this guy, I still believe this guy has the ability to score 30 goals if he was as aggressive as a lot of other guys. You know what I mean? Like, I think part of it is getting more shots on net and not missing. But I also think that if he deked and did a little bit more, he would probably score a lot more goals. But he doesn't want to risk giving up one going the other way. He has really come into his own. And I think Reardon should get a lot of credit. And I think Brooks Orpik and a lot of other guys should get a lot of credit for how he's grown. I think he gets the most credit for a lot of the things that he's done. But the philosophy about how he plays the game now is just beautiful. And I think as he grows older, he's going to get scary good. Because as he gets more confident, like you've kind of been seeing here and there, where he'll do these dekes and stuff like that, and not even think about it, where he deked around Stamkos in one of the games in Tampa and helped create a goal.
Yeah, that's good.
He is going to become an absolute stud, and I cannot be more happy for him. You know, Niskanen's done a great job with him too, and you know, I think for me, Niskanen, you know, we talked about the other night, you on Slack, you were like, well, Niskanen just took the blame for all three goals because he saw that on social media. And we both talked about it. It was like, is he being a leader or something like that? Because we assumed all three goals weren't his fault. But then when you actually look at the videotape and you break it down, he did three bad things to contribute to each of those goals. The next night, didn't he come out and he dominated at 5-on-5? I mean, wasn't it like 17-2 or 24-4? It was, his numbers were ridiculous. He out of anybody deserves a huge amount of credit for his bounce back games, to help push the Caps to become Eastern Conference champions. And that sounds crazy to say still.
Yeah. When we're talking about Niskanen, it's important to consider that Trotz is doing some pretty hard line matching with him, at least in the Tampa series. You know, he was making sure that Niskanen saw Stamkos and Kucherov. And you're right that the Capitals, you know, were attacking more than they were defending when Niskanen was on the ice versus Stamkos and Kucherov, which is mind boggling. I'm not on the same page as you about Dmitry Orlov. And I don't mean that to say like, I don't think he's good or anything like that. I just don't think that he's ever going to be the scoring player because positionally he doesn't get that deeply involved in the play unless it's a rush. That was what I thought back in the day. Like if we ever compared him to the model of Mike Green, and there's a lot that he is similar to Mike Green about, especially in neutral, Mike Green used to go below the circles in the offensive zone, and Dmitry Orlov doesn't do that. He usually hangs out in those high Carlson spots, which is fine. It just means that he's not going to have the same shot volume that you need to become your 25 scorer like Green. Green had some crazy numbers in 2008-2009, and I don't think he'll ever be a Norris Trophy winner anymore like I thought for a while. I also think that like for a guy like Orlov, we're kind of looking at the peak right now.
It's possible. I also think that with Orlov, consider too that the team could start changing in the next couple of years, and it could be more him and Kuznetsov are the superstars, and Ovechkin, Orlov might get on the power play. And you can also think about the team might need him to be more aggressive. And if he's starting to score this much without going down below the circles, imagine what happens if he actually starts doing so, which I think he will in time, because that's how he used to play in the KHL and in the minor leagues in the KHL. I don't think that's something that's gone. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, to be determined. We'll see down the line. And I think you're absolutely right about how the team may change going forward. If I could turn the page from an incredibly successful Tampa series to the Stanley Cup Finals and a team that I was completely ready to shamelessly jump on the bandwagon of had the Capitals not won either in the last couple series. The Vegas Golden Knights, led by beloved former Capital Cody Eakin.
No, Peter, come on.
Actually, so Cody Eakin, fourth line center, I think, is getting just smushed. He is not doing well. And I'm looking at the team and I'm thinking, okay, how can the Caps beat them? And I think the answer is England, especially on the PK. For some reason, Gallant loves Ango on the PK. I think that could be really good. But also, I don't know who they're going to put that fourth line out, like the Ryan Reeves, Cody Eakin line out against. But I'm looking forward to those shifts. Because Cody, like, have you seen how big Oshie and Wilson and Ovechkin have been playing? And then you put 4'6", 118-pound Cody Eakin out there. And the kid is going to get destroyed. It's going to be delicious.
Unless you're Henrik Lundqvist. Remember when Eakin ran him over?
Yeah.
That's going to be interesting. I don't even know what to say. I always love how I'm like, I wrote a post about how George McPhee and Nate Schmidt led the Golden Knights to the Stanley Cup. And people were like, you're forgetting Cody Eakin. Well, there was a reason.
Because he's extremely forgettable. So, God, it's the worst time to rehash stuff. But Cody Eakin was in like the Mike Ribeiro trade. And I think he actually was, he was in Dallas for a while, right? Yeah. And he was doing darn good when Dallas was a fun team. And then that ended immediately when they lost their coach. And anyway, but Eakin's, I don't think Eakin's a stud. I think that there's something really jammed up on Vegas's depth, and they have been surviving on the slam dunk, no contest MVP Conn Smythe leader, which is Marc-Andre Fleury, who if you looked at all game situations, has saved about 18 goals above what a human could reasonably expect from a goalie in these playoffs. God. With three goals being roughly equivalent to a win, that means that a series and a half Fleury has spotted the Vegas Golden Knights. This team is so unlikely. It is mind-boggling. My mind is in a bottle. I don't understand. But so, and the question is, can they do it for four more wins? Or can the Capitals crack them?
I think there's something more to that too, though. That I do think they play with so much speed that that's going to ultimately be the Caps' issue, if anything.
Because they're going to be faster than the Caps are. That's for
yeah.
Sure.
Well, I think that's I'll use this metaphor basically or imagery is that in Game 5 against the Winnipeg Jets in Winnipeg, Winnipeg was trying to come back. They pulled their goalie. They couldn't even get pressure in the zone of the Golden Knights because the Golden Knights have this just speed where they cover you and make you uncomfortable all the way up the ice. And I think almost all of that is Marc-Andre Fleury just being a god right now. I also think that the way they play, they kind of rely on Math to just make these huge saves, and he is. And like he's just like, yeah, bring it on. You know what I mean? But I really think that the system they play is so fast. It's just this quick strike system that it can really make teams uncomfortable. And if you're down two goals 5 minutes into the game, I mean, it's just hard to come back, especially with how hard they go and how, you know, Nate Schmidt is their best defenseman. And what does he bring? Speed. Like, it's just like everyone in the lineup, even if you look at Eakin, fast, you know, he's one of their scrubs.
He is fast. And you're right that like one of the things that a player like Schmidt does is he's similar to Orlov in the respect that he's good at turning the wave after wave of offense, right? You get attack, he'll shut you down at the blue line, and then he'll get a quick breakout, and then there's a counter strike going. And that's something that can be really scary for the Capitals, especially if you've got, you know, like Orpik on the ice or somebody like that may have a hard time dealing with an odd man rush and having to lay down and block a shot, and those accumulate over time, just like you saw with Timante Smith-Pelly. So there's a lot of things to be afraid of there. And that should be a credit to Gerard Gallant, the head coach of the Vegas Golden Knights, who was doing really similar stuff with the Panthers before he got canned there when they, you know, went anti-computer boys a couple years back. Vegas is a good team, but I also think that there's no team that I can think of. This is I'm inviting in here, but they're not a paper tiger, but they've got flaws, and they've got flaws that are more explicit than we've seen in Tampa, in Pittsburgh, yeah, or in Columbus.
I would agree with that.
But you can't do anything if the goalie is unbeatable. And right now, the goalie is unbeatable. There's a monster at the end of this tunnel, and it's Marc-Andre Fleury. And he's the only thing standing between Barry Trotz and Brian McClellan and Alex Ovechkin and a Stanley Cup. And I don't know how the hell we got here. I don't know how George McPhee is on the other end of this tunnel. I don't. What the hell is going on with this freaking league?
It's destiny.
It is destiny. Capitals got eliminated last year and then made a bunch of bad moves. They start the season, I'm saying, they could still be good, and they looked okay for about a month, and then things got bad in November, and they kind of got worse until like February, and then like Holtby got terrible. Then they got a little better as the season got ended, but I was like, man, this team is lucky to make the playoffs. They're a marginal team. They're not, you know, super dark horse like I don't know, like the Avs were or something like that. But they're not. This team, what the hell is going on? They look amazing. And then the freaking expansion team in its first year of existence with the coach that made the finals with the team that he inherited from the former GM of the Capitals with a player that the Capitals didn't use in last year's playoffs, getting the most ice with the goalie that destroyed the Capitals' souls at least three times over the last decade. Who the fuck scripted this?
Oh, man, you need to see the Bowling Green photos with McPhee and Brian McClellan, former college teammates.
That's right. Jesus. They were in a dorm room together at some point, drinking Pabst Blue Ribbon.
I know. Nothing makes sense. I don't know what to make of any of it. You know, I don't. I mean, I think when Ovi, maybe Ovi is the Russian Jesus. You know, maybe he is. Maybe we just gotta like just let us just suspend reality here, because
our friends in the Orthodox Church would say that Jesus is the Russian Jesus.
Perhaps. Or maybe Ovi's beard gave him special powers. I don't know. But like when Ovi said we're not going to be sucked this year, you know.
Yeah, he called a shot.
He did. And I don't know. They did suck. They sucked really bad. But then he would just constantly keep the team winning. Like it was literally him. A lot of times it was literally him. Oh, Ovi scored 3 goals in the power play again. Oh, yeah. Ovi did this. You know, I think
he scored 7 goals in the first 2 games.
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense. None of it makes sense. I just think that that's what we have to just – I really think it's him.
It's a really dumb sport. We in a dumb team. Like we should have – but see, if we picked the Orioles, what have the Orioles done?
Oh, God.
We're not doing Orioles right now. We can do Orioles in July. Speaking of, it's almost June, and the Washington Capitals are still playing hockey. What on earth? Is going. I think you're right, by the way. And we're not going to be suck. Should live in eternal history. I remember. So you know, when whoever sent it to us said, you know, hey, you know, your podcast is at the top 100. I'm like, what? And I looked it up and I was like, what's in our feed that people care about? And I found, you know, one of our podcasts from like October, November is like the title of it is, are the Capitals good? And we're like, we're not sure. Well, it's the 25th of May. Then the Washington Capitals are about to compete for the Stanley Cup. So there's your freaking answer.
And they're really good. Like, I think they're very, 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 very good. It's
not fake. It's not a paper tiger. It's not fake news. I have no idea what's happening.
Tom Wilson is a good player.
Tom Wilson is a top line forward for the Washington Capitals. He was playing like 3 minutes a night when you started this. Like, I saw a picture of him. I guess people were asking about the Bylamo stuff when they could load the website and like, what the hell is this? Cause I guess there's a bunch of newbies. And so I like reshared an old Bylamo article from years ago. And there's a picture of Tom Wilson in it. And I'm looking at his stats and it's like, man, this guy's done nothing. And also he's an infant child. He's a grown ass man with a beard. And every series, when sometimes legally even, he's hurting people and it's delightful.
Yeah. Peter Hassett, is he a bust?
God, no. Jesus Christ, no. I'm willing to admit that Tom Wilson is definitively not a bust, though it took a coach to give him a chance to prove it, which you know what? Was what I said from the very beginning, by the way. I'm wrong, I'm right. That's how I do my mental gymnastics.
Let's go through three things really quick here.
All right.
Was the Brooks Orpik contract now bad?
Well, there's a test for this, and it's called the Orpikalypse test, and it was written a week and a half after Brooks Orpik was signed by the Capitals. And the very first test is that if the Washington Capitals win a Stanley Cup with Brooks Orpik on the roster, then the Brooks Orpik signing is a success. And
it is.
We'll talk about that in 2 weeks.
You know, no, we should talk about it soon because Brooks Orpik's dad is yelling at me in my Twitter mentions, so we should give him some love at some point very soon.
You should look at. I don't know what to say about that. I'm very nice about him.
Yeah, I guess.
Or at least how about this? I'm very careful about what I say about
100%
him.
100% true. That is 100% true.
On public public places. What's your next item?
I can be TJ Oshie contract. You know what? I don't give a f about it anymore. I love it.
I don't care.
I don't care at all. Has
screw it.
200 concussions. I love it. Whatever it takes. Brian McClellan's moves over the summer, were great.
Right, the right move. Every single one was the right move. Nate Schmidt, get out of here.
Yeah, Marcus who needs Nate?
Marcus Huhansen, more like.
That's the best part of this, to be honest. That's the best. Like, all this angst I had about a lot of things, I love them now.
It doesn't matter.
I will go up and open mouth kiss Brooks Orpik. I don't
care. See, no, you did it again. So this is not personal against Brooks Orpik. Yeah. He's been playing the same way for a decade. He's not changing. It's just people's expectations and the amount of money they're paying him and the amount of ice time they're giving him and then the players that they're putting aside. Doesn't matter. He's playing fine. He's playing better than he did during the regular season in every respect, especially in goals. I have to get to a wedding. Is there anything else that's really on your mind right now?
Oh, geez.
How about this one? Can people listen, friends? If you're listening to this podcast right now and you have access to social media and you click on an article from our website and then the website does not load for you, please do not tell us a joke about the Russian machine breaking. I can't take it. The flames are coming out of my head. The Menchie's just the same joke over and over again.
And no one knows how hard we've tried to fix this over the last year. Like, it's not like it's something that popped up, you know, a few days ago. I mean, the fact that a year and a half now. Yeah, the fact that our site is not showing as hacked. I literally ran around my basement.
All right. We should not speak any more about that until we're on the other end of it. But yes, I agree.
Yes. But yeah, I mean, the how far we've come over the last couple of weeks, I think we're close to maybe having something this weekend. That would be a dream come true. So
any closing items before I put on formal wear and go dance to some Bruno Mars songs?
Oh, yeah. I talked to Oli Kolzik briefly and I just let him know how happy I was for him. But seriously, 20 years later, I think it's like player development.
Oh yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
But it was really nice that I can talk to him and be like, congratulations and stuff like that. And, you know, he's just a dude. But, you know, 20 years ago, he was that guy that helped lead the team there. And at the end of game seven, you know, and I'm going to write about this, Ovechkin and Holtby kind of hugged him and they took a photo together. I just felt like that was the nicest thing. You know what I mean? Because, yeah. You know, Kolzik was basically the de facto captain when Ovechkin came into the locker room and was first drafted by the Capitals. He ended up being the goaltender coach of Holtby. We don't need to debate how great that went because of Oates and stuff like that. But, you know, he has been a guy who's put his heart and soul into the team after he retired. And it really makes you feel nice, like, when you think about guys like Peter Bondra, Ted Leonsis, you know, Ted, if you're listening, which I know you're not, but if you're listening, you deserve this. You've been a championship owner for a long time. And, you know, the way that this community has been built up as a hockey town is just, there's so much youth hockey in this area. There's so many hockey fans now. This is a championship hockey town, hopefully. But, you know, it already is, regardless if we win or lose. And I'm just so happy to share this with everyone. But, you know, when you look at guys like Oli, when you look at guys like Peter Bondra, when you look at guys like Alan May, you know, who have put their heart and soul into this team after they retired, they share in this too. We all share in this. And I hope that we can all push forward and in a few weeks we can celebrate something else, but I'm not going to say it.
Well put. I don't have anything to add to that. So on a somber note, have a lovely weekend, everyone. And let's get ready for Monday. We got a big day ahead of us. Thank you.
This has been Russian Machine Never Breaks, the podcast. But now, it's over. Nothing to see here. Move along.